So David is on his way to go sin, being pushed by events that are bigger than he is. And on his way there, the whole group of them, they meet some mules packed with food that stops them. And then Abigail meets them. She gets off and falls on her face on the dirt in front of David and begs him not to come avenge himself, because she said, when God makes you king, your conscience will bother you if you go down here and do this. And David, no matter what his men thought, said, blessed are you of the Lord for saving me from avenging myself today. If you hadn't met me, there wouldn't be a single male left in your whole family. And they took the gift and the food and went their way. And it left Nabal in the hands of God. And Nabal had a party where he got drunk. And the next morning, nobody could even speak. He was such a grumpy character, nobody could talk to him, reason with him. Next morning, Abigail thought maybe she ought to just tell her husband what she had done. So when she told Nabal, he was so overwhelmed, stunned, or whatever, that he just passed out. God struck him, but I don't know what the exact medical terms would have been. 10 days he lay in a coma, and finally he died. And when he died, everybody was happy. Abigail was glad he was dead. David heard about it. He was glad. He said, praise God. He's taken my part again. And he saw such value in Abigail's wisdom and understanding of God, he sent messengers to her and said, don't you want a real good husband instead of a real bad one? And she thought that was a good idea too. So all those possessions become available to David. And she goes and takes off with him and leaves them in the hands of servants or whatever. So David's got a wife now. And he's got another one, Ahinoam. Hadn't he married her by this time too? Right after that. That's the mistake David is making, and it's going to be major trouble for him later. Because you know that one of the things God said a king in his country could not do is multiply wives to himself. David is starting down a little bit of a slippery slope here. He's already got two wives, and he's not even king yet. It's going to lead to major problems later, because he's going to keep increasing in wives, which is contrary to the law of God. And David may not have known that. Not many people in Israel knew what the law said. The Levites weren't doing their job. Everything was falling apart. The priests weren't doing their job. There was no army to speak of, especially after the Philistines are going to wipe it out. Back to every man doing what's right in his own eyes. In other words, everybody doing the wrong thing. David's increasing in the knowledge of God so that God can use him later to put it all together again. That's in chapter 25. Chapter 26. Oh, in verse 44 of chapter 25, the last verse, Saul had given Michal, his daughter, David's wife, to a guy named Phalti, the son of Laish, who was of Galim. Don't ever accept gifts from wicked men. King Saul ever wants to give you somebody else's wife, don't take her. And this guy's going to suffer because of it. If anybody ever gives you a gift, don't automatically accept it. Try to hear from Jesus about the condition of their heart and see if there are any hooks in it. Little children never know that there are hooks in gifts. And every gift, every present, every Christmas present, every birthday present that little children receive that is too much has a hook in it for them and their hearts. It's not good. It's not from God. Every time a child is given too much, there's a hook in it that's going to do them harm. Gives them too many choices as to what to play with, for one thing. Makes their life harder. Chapter 26, verse 1, some spies come to Saul and said, we got him. We know where he is. Saul took off with 3,000 men again. He pitched in the hill of Hakalah, which is before Jeshimon, in verse 3, along the road. David abode in the wilderness. He saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness. I wonder how he saw that. David therefore sent out spies. Well, there he's being honest about it anyway. Sent out spies and understood that Saul was come in very deed. David arose and came to the place where Saul had pitched, and David beheld the place where Saul lay. Abner, the son of Ner, the captain of the army. This was at night. They were camped around there. David asked a couple of his close comrades, "Who wants to go with me down into that camp?" Abishai spoke up and said, "I will." So they sneaked down into the camp while the army slept, and they thought they were really good sneakers. Reality was, God had put them all to sleep. David and Abishai weren't that good. Sneaked through the whole army. Come to Saul's place, take his bottle where he had his water and his spear, and sneak out. But when they were there, look at verse 8. Abishai said to David, "God has delivered your enemy into your hand. Let's kill him. Let me hit him one time. Just one. let me stab him with this spear. Just one time. I won't even hit him twice. I get him one time." God's given him. David said, "Hold on now. He's been anointed." So he got him away. I like David's attitude. Verse 9, David said to Abishai, "Destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless?" David said furthermore, "As the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day will come to die. Or he'll perish, he'll descend into battle and perish, but the Lord forbid that I should stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed." But you, how about you just taking that spear and the cruse of water, and let's get out of here.
Can you imagine?
Having a conversation. He had to. So David went over to the other side and stood on the top of a hill way off, and a great space being between them. And David cried to the people, and Abner woke up. He said, "Abner, you're not answering me." And Abner said, "Who are you that cries unto the king?" And David said to Abner, "Art thou not a valiant man? Who is like thee in Israel? Why then hast thou not kept the Lord thy king? For there is come one of the people in to destroy the king thy lord. This thing is not good that thou hast done. Let us sneak in like that. As the Lord liveth, you are worthy to die because you have not kept your master, the Lord's anointed. And now see where the where is the king's spear, Abner? Where is this cruse of water that was by his pillow?" And then Saul recognized David's voice. He said, "Is this thy voice, my son David?" And David said, "It is my voice, my lord, O king." He said, "Why doth my lord thus pursue after his servant? What have I done? What evil is in my hand? Now therefore I pray thee, let my lord the king hear the words of his servant. If the Lord has stirred you up against me, let him accept an offering. I'll give it. But if they be the children of men, cursed be they before the Lord. For they have driven me out this day from abiding in the inheritance of the Lord, saying, go into other lands, go serve other gods." He can't even find a safe place in Judah. He has to go to Moab or Philistia, and which basically amounts to going to serve other gods. And when David says, "Cursed be whoever did that," that might carry some weight, because the Spirit of God is with him. "Now therefore let not my blood fall to the earth before the face of the Lord, for the king of Israel has come out to seek a flea, as when one doth hunt a partridge in the mountains." And again, maybe for just about the last time, Saul is shaken to being reasonable for just a few minutes by the truth. Then said Saul, "I have sinned. Return, my son David, for I will no more do thee harm, because my soul was precious in thine eyes this day. Behold, I have played the fool and have erred exceedingly." And David answered and said, "Behold the king's spear, and let one of the young men come over and get it." The Lord render to every man his righteousness and his faithfulness. For the Lord delivered thee into my hand this day, but I would not stretch forth my hand against the Lord's anointed. And behold, as thy life was much set by this day in my eyes, so let my life be much set by in the eyes of the Lord. And let him deliver me out of all tribulation. And Saul said to David, Blessed be thou, my son David. Thou shalt both do great things and shall also still prevail. David went his way and Saul returned to his place. But David is finally forced to face the reality. Saul has confessed he's sinning again, confessed that David's going to be king, confessed that things are going to go well with him, and David says, We got to get out of Dodge. We are not safe with a man like this anymore. And David said in his heart, Now I'm going to perish one day by the hand of Saul. The only thing left for me is to escape into the land of the Philistines. And Saul shall give up then, and I'm going to escape out of his hand. So David rose. He had 600 men with him now. Came to Achish, the son of Maok, king of Gath. And David dwelt with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, even David with his two wives, Ahinoam and Abigail. And it was told Saul that David was gone out of the country, gone to Philistia, and so Saul didn't chase him anymore. And David came to Achish and said, Now if I have found grace in your eyes, let them give me a place in some town in the country that I may dwell there. Why should thy servant dwell in the royal city with you? So Achish gave him Ziklag, that pertains to the kings of Judah unto this day. And the time that David dwelt in the country of Philistines was 16 months, full year and 4 months. And David and his men, this is what they would do. They would come out of Ziklag, right? David and his men come out of Ziklag upon occasion and raid people that are not Israelites. And they slaughter everybody, men, women, and children, so that nobody can survive to come back and the news get back to Gath. I'm still thinking that Gath is the northern one at this time, but it doesn't matter. Go back to Gath to King Achish. Achish says, Where do you get all these presents that you're bringing me? He said, Man, we attacked Hebron, Beersheba, and all these other places over here. And the king Achish is saying, Man, those Israelites are going to hate this guy. Yeah, he'll be a good servant to me. He can't go back to them because he's murdering all of them, stealing from them. So David and his men keep telling King Achish that they're slaughtering Israelites when they're really slaughtering other people and getting their animals and goods and presents for King Achish. And at the same time, David's taking presents that he's taking from these other people and giving it to these people over in Judah, so they're loving him more and more. Achish thinks they're hating him more and more. It's a perfect plan. Get rid of Amalekites in the process, which is always a good thing. So that's what goes on while he's at Ziklag for over a year. Verse 12, And Achish believed David, saying, He has made his people Israel utterly to abhor him. He's going to be my servant forever. Well, then it came to pass in those days that God was ready for Saul to die. And the Philistines gathered the armies together to warfare to fight with Israel. Achish said to David, You know assuredly that you shall go out with me to battle, you and your men. Now, this was the second time where David's in over his head. He cannot say to King Achish, I can't fight against Saul and Jonathan. He's afraid. He can't say, I really haven't been killing Israelites all this time. He can't do it. What he's in over is he doesn't have any options. Achish tells him, you're one of my most faithful. He says, You've been like an angel with me from the day you got here. Wonderful. Go with me on this journey, and I'm going to elevate you to my personal bodyguard, you and your men. So David has to pack up and go. Fortunately, God rescues him. And the Philistine lords of those other cities come to King Achish and said, We don't want this guy going with us. He'll turn against us, help King Saul win, and then he'll get back into favor. That's how he's going to get back into favor with Saul. We can see it coming. You don't know this guy. So King Achish comes to David and says, Look, I don't find any problem with you. I know what you really are. But these other Philistines, they say no. And David said, I can't do anything right. I can't satisfy anybody. That's what he said. What have I done now? He said, well, nevertheless, you got to go back. You can't go with us. Philistine generals won't have it. Sorry. He rescued again because he put his trust in God. So David goes back with his men to Ziklag. He went back to Ziklag and the whole place was burned down. Everybody gone, all the cattle, everything. And if my memory serves me right, David asked God what to do about it. God said, chase after them, you're going to get everything back. So he and his men chase after the people that went toward Egypt. But when they get to the brook Besor, here, isn't it? 200 of the men just can't go any farther. So they camp there. David and the other guys go chase after what they find is Amalekite. But they don't know exactly how to go in this desert. But they happen upon a dying man in the wilderness, in the desert. Now, the Amalekites have struck again. What are the two qualities of an Amalekite, Kathy Tuck? Two C words.
Cunning.
No, that's Midianites.
Cruel and cowardly.
They have attacked a city of women and children. And they won. Wow. That's all they would attack, somebody that couldn't fight them back. They wouldn't have attacked if David and his men had been there. So when they find this Egyptian slave that's been dumped in the desert, they ask the Egyptian slave, who are you and where you come from? He said, I'm an Egyptian and I was a servant to an Amalekite. Can you imagine being a slave to an Amalekite? And I got sick, so they just dumped me out here in the wilderness. They didn't want to put up with me. They had so many new slaves that they got from Ziklag, a city called Ziklag, that they didn't need me anymore. They didn't want to waste any medicine on me. They had all these new slaves. And David said, will you bring us to wherever their camp is? He said, you promise not to make me a slave to an Amalekite again? That was a deal. No more slavery to an Amalekite. He was ready to do anything after they fed him and gave him some water. So he led David and his men. They surprised them, killed them all except for, was it 200 or 400 young men that drove off on camels? And took back everything. When they got back to the brook Besor, the sons of Belial that went with David said to the 200 who couldn't make it past brook Besor, they said, we're not going to give you anything of all the animals or all we stole. You just have your own wives and children. What was yours and that's all. David said, no. Because David had learned a lesson. You don't leave the city with nothing but women and children anymore. You leave some soldiers there to protect them, and they get just as much as the rest. And he made it a statute in Israel from that day on. So the sons of Belial didn't get to be as cruel as they wanted to be toward those who were too weary to continue fighting. That's chapter 28.
People today would be mostly Amalekites from then.
There are no Amalekites left. God said he's going to wipe them out. The latest book in your Old Testament is a story about God still wiping out Amalekites, the book of Esther. That's what the point of Esther is, but most people don't know that. But you know it, right? You'll see. That's the point of Esther, is that God is still keeping his promise to wipe Amalekites off the earth that he made in Exodus 17. Okay, chapter 29, by the way, the Philistines went on up north to fight in this area up here. I don't know why they went up there to fight, but that's where the battle took place, around Mount Gilboa. Chapter 30 tells about Ziklag. King Saul's been praying and asking God for help because the Philistines are coming. God's not answering him by any means. Dreams, prophets, nothing. Dead silence. So he comes up with an idea. Now, up until this time, he has put to death witches according to the law of God. But he's lost control. He's losing control of everything. People are deserting his army and going to David. Trickling now, it'd be a whole lot Well, actually, there's more than what we're told here now, according to First Chronicles, whatever. I'll show it to you. But he's losing control of his own servants in his presence. Because when he says he wants to go to a witch, one of his attendants says, I know where one is. Well, why hadn't he told Saul already? He doesn't have control or doesn't have the trust of his servants. So Saul is camped at Mount Gilboa, somewhere around here. The Philistines are camped north. Endor is up behind them. So at night, Saul and his servant have to come down from Mount Gilboa, go around the Philistine camp to get to Endor. And when they get to Endor, he's disguised himself and says, I want you to bring somebody up from the dead. And she says, don't you know the King Saul's putting to death everybody he catches that does that? And King Saul swears by Jehovah, who commanded him to put witches to death, that no harm will come to you. Now he's swearing by Jehovah to disobey Jehovah. He's completely gone. So she said, who do you want? He said, bring up Samuel. Now, it says in the book of Hebrews in the New Testament that Satan had, before Jesus came here, the power of death. It mentions that. I'm assuming that there's some kind of connection here with this witch's ability to bring Samuel up from paradise, which was in the heart of the earth at this time. Jesus transferred it when he ascended. Hell was divided into paradise and torment. People could see each other from one place to the other. Jesus told a parable of the rich man in hell talking to Abraham, who was in paradise. It doesn't happen anymore because Jesus, when he ascended, took paradise. Now paradise is to be with the Lord, and hell, the torment, was left behind. They can't talk to each other anymore. But that witch had power with Satan to bring Samuel up from paradise. Where'd Satan get that power? I mean, Saul said that David was his enemy. God has delivered my enemy into my hands. But who was really Saul's enemy? When he went up to that witch and Samuel appeared, his presence brought knowledge with it. And she screamed and said, you're Saul. Saul said, what are you seeing? What are you seeing? She said, I see God's coming up and down out of the earth. And he knew it was Samuel. He said, what is he like? He's this and that. And Then he starts talking to this voice. And Samuel said, why have you disquieted me? Bring me up like this. He said, God won't answer me anymore. He said, why you bring me up for? Seeing God has become your enemy. Bad to have God as your enemy. So you see, you should have marked Saul's name off that list. So here is Samuel, and he said, I told you God had chosen a neighbor of yours that was better than you. You came from Benjamin, your neighbor is Judah, and God has chosen a neighbor, David, to take your place, and tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. He meant in hell. He didn't mean in paradise. Not for Saul. Tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. When he finished talking to Saul, Saul just collapsed. It was all over. God had finished using him to discipline and teach David to trust in God. He finished with him now. Just a matter of going on with the process and killing him, getting rid of him. And to show how weak-willed he was, his servant and the witch both tried to get him up and feed him. He said, I'm not eating anything. And they made him eat. He was a person now without a will, no willpower. He was like a city without walls. Any spirit could come in and out. So they made him sit there while she fixed him some food, fed him, and then he made the long journey back around the Philistine camp up to Mount Gilboa. Well, the death of Saul is told about in the last chapter. The Philistines fought against Israel. Oh, at the end of chapter 30, by the way, is what I was thinking about, David bringing spoil to the elders of Judah, and names all the cities that David sent gifts to. And people of Judah thought a lot of David. The Philistines fought against Israel, and the men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain upon Mount Gilboa. We have some good pictures of Mount Gilboa, too, if you ever want to see them. And what it would look like up on Mount Gilboa, looking down into the valley beneath where the Philistines were. Philistines followed hard upon Saul and upon his sons. This is a sad part, is that Jonathan dies with them. But God saved Jonathan a lot of trouble, because it would have been too much for Jonathan to be next to David, especially after David backslid a little bit. The pressure for him to avenge the law that David broke and to be king as his father was would have been too much for Jonathan. It would have been hard. It would have been hard. It was better that he go on and die now instead of having to go through what he would have had to go through later with David.
John, wasn't that curse that Saul uttered at Jonathan when he had tasted the honey, wasn't that really still in effect?
Well, I guess it could have had some kind of effect on it, because Saul hadn't been rejected by God yet when he cursed whoever had eaten that food. Yeah, that's a good thought. The battle went sore against Saul after Jonathan, Abinadab, Melchishua were dead, Saul's sons. Archers hit him, and he was very wounded. Sore wounded of the archers. Then said Saul to his armor bearer, "Draw your sword and thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me." But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Therefore Saul took a sword and fell upon it. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. So Saul died, and his three sons, and his armor bearer, and all his men that same day together. And when the Amalekite happened to come by and saw that Saul was still breathing, So all the Israelites from these cities up here, Beth Shemesh, I imagine, no, not Beth Shemesh, Beth Shan, they abandoned their cities. Philistines took over, and they crossed the Jordan River over here to Jabesh Gilead and some other places. And the Philistines came to strip the bodies of the slain and get their armor. They found Saul and his three sons on Mount Gilboa. They cut off his head, stripped off his armor, sent it to the land of the Philistines round about, and to publish it in the house of their idols among the people. And they put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, that goddess. And they fashioned his body to the wall at Beth Shean, which is right over here. You can see Mount Gilboa from Beth Shean easily. When the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard of this across the river, they came and took the bodies of Saul and his sons off the wall of Beth Shan and brought it back across the river to Jabesh Gilead and burnt them there. And they took their bones and buried them under a tree at Jabesh and fasted for 7 days. Now David was down south wondering what was going to happen to his friend Jonathan and Saul in Ziklag. And one day there came a young man there. In verse 2, after 3 days, a man came out of the camp from Saul. His clothes were rent. He had dirt put on his head. When he came to David, he fell to the earth and did obeisance, bowed down to him. And David said, "Where'd you come from?" He said, "Out of the camp of Israel, I'm escaped." And David said, "Well, how things go?" He said, "The people are fled from the battle, and many of the people are fallen and dead. And Saul and Jonathan, his son, are dead." David said, "How do you know that Saul and Jonathan are dead?" And the young man told him and said, "Well, as I happened by chance." In other words, after the battle was over, I went to see who I could finish off and steal their stuff from. That's what an Amalekite does. He does not fight in a battle. He waits until somebody can't fight back, and then he does whatever he does. So that's true to his nature. I chanced upon Mount Gilboa and Saul leaned upon his spear, and the chariots and horsemen followed hard after him. And when he looked behind him, he saw me and called me, and I said, "Here I am." And he said, "Who are you?" Now here's Saul saying, "Who are you? Tell me what your parents' name is. What do you do for an occupation? Let me see your resume before I ask you to kill me, please." You believe this guy, Rob? And I answered him, "I am an Amalekite." And David's ears go ding. Amalekite. Amalekite. He said unto me again, Saul said to me again, "Please, stand upon me and kill me. Anguish has come upon me. I'm still barely living." So, to do him the favor, I stood upon him and killed him, because I was sure he couldn't live after he was wounded the way he was. And I took the crown that was on his head and the bracelet that was on his arm, and I brought him unto you as a present. And David took hold of his clothes and tore them, and likewise all the men that were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until evening for Saul and for Jonathan his son, and for the people of the Lord, for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword. I mean, Israel's in a mess. The Philistines have conquered a big part of the northern part, occupied the cities. Religiously, things are in a mess. Everything's fallen apart. Fallen by the sword. But then David said to the young man that told him, he said, "Where are you from?" He said, "I am the son of a stranger. I'm not an Israelite. I'm an Amalekite." And David said to him, "Will you tell me something? How were you not afraid to stretch forth your hand to destroy the Lord's anointed? How was it you were not afraid to touch the man God had anointed?" And then David called one of his young men and said, "Go over there and kill him." And he did not even question what David said. He went over and killed him. Before he died, David said to him, "Your blood be on your head. For your mouth has testified against you, saying, 'I have slain the Lord's anointed.'" So whether he lied or whether he told the truth, it's the same results. He was an Amalekite, doing what Amalekites always do, or claiming it anyway. David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son, and he bade them, he made it a rule to teach the children of Judah the use of the bow. It is written in the book that we don't have anymore, the book of Jasher, the upright. Look what he says about Jonathan and Saul. "The beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath. Publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Ye mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings, for there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away. The shield of Saul is though he had not been anointed with oil." I tell you what, being anointed with oil meant a lot to David, didn't it? "From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided." David never stopped loving Saul and honoring what he did that was good for God's people. "They were swifter than eagles. They were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel." You know, Saul in his younger days did deliver Israel from Moab and Edom and Ammon and Philistines, all of them, which benefited Israel greatly at the time. "How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished?" Well, after David finished grieving for Saul and Jonathan, he asked God where to go next, and God told him to go to Hebron. Hebron becomes David's first capital city. He is king in Judah for 7.5 years before he's king over all of Israel. This is where he starts. They dwelt in Hebron. Verse 4, the men of Judah came, and there they anointed David king over the house of Judah. And they were the ones that told David, the men of Jabesh-Gilead, honored Saul by rescuing his body. And David sent messengers to Jabesh-Gilead and said, "Blessed be the Lord, you have showed kindness to your Lord, even Saul, and have buried him." And he asked them to come make a league with him. He suggests that, you know, I ought to be king over the whole thing, not just Judah. How about let's start with you. But, in verse 9, there's trouble. Because Saul has a son who survived. And Abner has taken that son and gone to Mahanaim. Here. I don't like the Mahanaim is there in those new books you got. It doesn't make a bit of sense for Mahanaim to be here. I like this one, up north. So he's here at Mahanaim, Abner has It's not Ithbaal? Ah, that's what the man of God calls him. But what Saul called him was Ishbaal. Here we go. This was Saul's son that he named in honor of Baal. Let's look at this. Psalm 16:4, David says, "Their sorrows shall be multiplied that hasten after another God. Their drink offerings of blood will I not offer, nor take up their names into my lips." Saul named one of his sons Ishbaal, meaning a man of Baal. Jonathan, who loved David so much, apparently named one of his sons Meribbaal, which, according to BDB, that's a Hebrew concordance, most likely means Baal is my advocate. The writer of the two books named Samuel saw the devastating results of God's people worshiping Baal, and he refused, whenever possible, to allow the name Baal to appear in his writings. He changed the names of Saul and Jonathan's sons, Ishbaal and Meribbaal, to Ishbosheth and Mephibosheth. And it means exactly that. It means blah. That's what Bosheth means. It means blah, blah. That's the proper definition. He even changed the name given to Gideon in Judges, Jerubbaal. He wouldn't even say that. Jerubbaal means contender against Baal. You know, they gave Gideon that name because he pulled his image down in the book of Judges. When he mentions Gideon, he calls him Jerubbaal. Bosheth is a Hebrew word that means shame. So the author of Samuel altered Saul's son's name from a man of Baal to a man of that shameful, disgusting, yucky thing. Jonathan's son's name is changed from Baal is my advocate to that disgraceful thing is my advocate. And Gideon's revised name is translated contender against disgrace. The note... I erased this note. But anyway, I'll tell you about it. The note on 2 Samuel 2:8 on the following sheet from the New Oxford Annotated Bible shows that the spirit of honoring Baal has not completely departed from the hearts of religious men. In what they consider to be a show of superior wisdom, the editors of the New Oxford Annotated Bible reverse, look at this, they reverse the biblical author's work and change his word Ishbosheth back to Ishbaal. They obviously do not agree with the biblical writer that Baal was a disgraceful thing. And so they remove from his name the disgrace that the writer of Samuel felt belonged with that Canaanite god, returning Baal to the place of respect that King Saul originally gave him. Look at the next page. Christian scholars working on a new study Bible, New Oxford Annotated Bible, were motivated by the Spirit of Yahweh their God to replace the names given in the Bible to Israelite children named after Baal with names that reflect the more respectful tone toward the Canaanite deity. Here are two examples. This is 2 Samuel 2:8. "But Abner, son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, had taken Ishbaal, son of Saul, and brought him to Mahanaim." That's not what's in the Hebrew, and it's not what's in your Bible. But these scholars think that's the more appropriate name. The writer of 1 Samuel, or 2 Samuel, felt that the name Baal, man of Baal, was disgusting. And it should not be shown that much respect. But these men, in their superior wisdom, think better. They think the biblical author was wrong to do that. Here's another case of it. 2 Samuel 11:21 in your Bible says Gideon's name was Jerub-Bosheth. They changed that. Who killed Abimelech, son of Jerubbaal? They went back to the name that was originally given to him. So in spite of the fact that the Hebrew from which your Bibles were translated says Bosheth, these men think that they are more too sophisticated to give in to such things. They want to honor Baal again. And they do. They do not translate what's there. They translate what they think you ought to think is there. That's biblical scholarship for you. Sounds pretty common, doesn't it, Drew? This is what is actually in the Hebrew. Chapter 2, verse 8, But Abner, the son of Ner, captain of Saul's son, took the man of that disgraceful thing, the son of Saul, and brought him to Mahanaim and made him king over Ephraim, Benjamin, and over all Israel. Now we have, for the first time, two kings, one in Judah and one in Israel. It's just a sign of things to come. This isn't going to last but about 5 years, but it's going to come back after that.